I'm sitting here with Pierre. We're sitting in the Maldives on the beautiful white sand beach. I've been often thinking that it looks like a Windows desktop background here, you know? It looks so nice. Almost too nice. It looks like a fantasy world. So I got to know Pierre a couple of days ago. Pierre was my diving teacher. And I saw on the, there was a little intro, like a board, a picture of all the teachers with a little bit of background info. And on this board, it told that you changed your former life into what you are now. You were in the military before, and you are now following what I assume is your passion. And that's something that I find quite interesting. So my thought is for this conversation that we speak about a little bit where you now, we speak about who you were in the past, how the journey was to get where you are now, and maybe we touch a little bit on the future also.
Thank you, Martin. First time I have a mic, I think. Yeah. Thank you for this experience. That's a nice experience.
Let's see how it turns out.
And that's funny so far. Ask me anything.
When we were diving, I went with my wife, who was relatively worried about going into the water, and so we dove with you. And it's pretty tough to go and dive here compared to where we were before. We went in Thailand before. Super chill, you just go into the water, nothing happens. But here there's a lot of currents. You get dragged back and forward in the water. And there was this moment when we were to hold on to a rock or to a coral reef, 15 meters below. And for a beginner, I think both of my wife and me, it's relatively scary. Like, where do you hold on to begin with? Like, things can, pinch you or pierce you or whatever. And so both my wife and I, we held on to you, and you were like a rock there under the water. You were so calm. Like, and afterwards my wife and I talked about that. You're like a good representation for like what is a man currently. You're like calm, kind, like collected on the water, just being there, totally relaxed. What do you think about that?
So thank you. I have to put things in perspective. We were at Cane Corner. The current was medium, yes. And I had a hook. And I dove with Marie before, I think. And I anticipated the fact that the current would be too strong for her. So I prepared my hook way before reaching the corner. And so when we reached the corner, I hook. And I was ready. And so she was holding me on my BCD. And I didn't anticipate that you would also hold her.
So a BCD is like a vest that you have when you dive. It's, I have to assume that many listeners don't know.
Sorry, guys. It means buoyancy control device.
Yeah.
And this is what allows you to float. And Marie had my BCD, and actually Martin had also Marie. So actually I was with two people holding me, and it was lots of weight with the current. And so sometimes I would like use my abs as much as I can. Hold on. But I was very calm. That's true. I was very calm. It was nice. And yes, what did we say about it? Like, I was, what the question
is? I think what's happening now is that the old ideal for what a man should be is being questioned, and maybe we're in a time where there's especially young dudes are looking for like how should you be as a man, and we see online different kind of role models. You have, I don't know if you know, Andrew Tate is in one corner.
I've heard about him, but I cannot
like
really tell.
A representation for like old school, like a tough guy, a macho guy. He's a kickboxer. He talks bad about women, and so this is like the old school. Then you have maybe people that completely deny that they're men, and I find this it's not so clear perhaps as it was before. What's the role for?
Okay.
How are you a man today? What's a good idea? And I, my impression is that you give a good example for what it could be. You have the macho side with former military, but you also strike me as a very calm and kind person. It's a nice balance that you have going there.
Thank you. So yes, it's a quest, I guess, for everyone. No? Everybody wants to be a real man or real woman. My idea is to be true to myself, like not lie to my people, to people around me. So I can't.
That's so important. That's something that I want. Mm-hmm. That I want the core of this podcast to be around, and that's not easy.
No,
sorry, I interrupted.
No worry. But this is what I've observed talking to people and women and also to men. It's about being true to yourself. So, and I've noticed that also with my previous relationship. Like, I've been in shape, I've been fat, I've been many Pierre, I had hairs before, I had no more hair. So I went through lots of things that lots of people go through. It's not a big deal, but it still has an impact on you. So, I grow through that, and I have noticed that, for example, to be a man, you have to love yourself. And I've noticed that I've been loved too. I don't know if it makes sense. I'm a bit mixed, but you have two different experiences: the one inside you and the one outside.
Yeah.
And the one outside, I've noticed that doesn't matter who I was physically, shape or not, hair or not.
Yeah.
Young, old, I've always been loved. So I have to remember that. And about me, it's like a interaction between these two worlds, and it makes me grow. So I want to be in peace. And I think I am more and more in peace. This is why I guess you saw that.
Yeah. So there was a lot of interesting stuff that came up in what you said right now. The first thing I want to ask you, have you always been true to yourself?
No.
And can you tell a story about maybe when you found out, like where you found out that you were on the wrong track, or that you decided that you're going to take a step in this direction?
Yeah, I don't have a particular memory or any experience. It's just a personal quest. I remember looking for a word many years ago, and this word is ataraxia. Ataraxia is Greek, and it means absence of trouble. And that's really me. I don't want to be disturbed or to feel that this bad energy. So I always try to find my balance. I think it starts with that.
You devoted 10 years of your life to the military.
Mm-hmm.
The first question I have around that, how did you get the idea that you would join the military? What drew you there?
So I had a model when I was a little bit younger, like an uncle. He was in the army. I remember meeting a woman just briefly, and she said that she was very proud of her man because he was able to take care of himself, like be like disciplined. And I think these two ideas brought me there, especially in the Navy. But why I chose the Navy? Because it's not about the job I had, because my job was simple. It was support, and it was in offices. But I was drove by the idea of traveling. I wanted to see many countries. I wanted to be in the middle of the sea. I wanted to do missions also. And I did a little bit of everything in these 10 years. Many memories in the Pacific, in the Mediterranean Sea. It was super nice. And I spent 10 years, from 21 to 31 years old.
So you go on a battleship and...
French headquarters for 3 years, and then I've been sent to Pacific for 2 years and in the Pacific again in an office. But then I decided it was time for me to see what Navy is. So I asked to be on a mission for a few weeks to try. And it was definitely eye-opening. The rhythm at sea is super different. But you can create bonds. You live very intensely your the life. It's very intense. It was very interesting.
Is it? I saw on some documentary that like you share beds, that you have like that there's like three different people sharing one bed, that you take turns in sleeping.
So maybe in the submarines, maybe I would say maybe because I've never been to. But on the ship, on the small ship, we had three couches on top of each other, like with twin beds.
Yeah.
If I'm not wrong, twin beds. But it was three, so one very close to the floor, one around the hip, and one around the shoulder. And I slept very close to
the ceiling.
So yeah, definitely, yeah. Very close to ceiling.
Is that like a status thing in the military, if you sleep on top, in the middle, or bottom?
Not at all. It's pure luck.
Yeah, I would want to sleep close to the ceiling. Probably you have most peace there. Okay. Did you manage people? Did you have a team that you were overlooking?
At the end, at the very last year of my contract, two young girls. It was also very interesting to, because I was very inexperienced in managing people, like no experience at all, pure guts, and not easy. And I've seen at this during the experience that the people that you are leading, they want leadership. And if you have leadership, if you're a good role model, then they will follow you. But I was not that back then. And I was not, because it was not my passion. This work was not my passion. Now I think Martin saw it, because this job is my passion. I fully am where I'm supposed to be. So you can see it. But back then, no.
What did you get wrong about management back then? What were some mistakes, if you could talk to your former self, like that you would correct or give tips about?
It's not only about me. I think it's about really, if you do the right job, if you are the one you are supposed to be, then it is easy. It becomes difficult when the individual is not doing what he's supposed to do. But if you are in this position, then I guess you have to listen, embrace the work, embrace the model part, and then listen. Don't be judgmental, don't be critical, just open and be kind. Kindness, I think, it's a huge thing, because the people that you are leading still want to do that job, either by passion or because they have to live from it, but they want to do that in, I guess, in peace and as best as they can. So the two have to connect in on a human way. It doesn't have to be mechanical. I think the human has to connect first.
I was such a bad manager when I started. I assumed the opposite. I assumed that people are not going to do a good job, and that I like need to watch what they're doing and like correct them and be on them like in a very negative way. And I think perhaps it's maybe what I experienced also at home. I think my dad was a bit in that way, that it was at times I just felt that he was out there to criticize what I was doing. That was the main interaction. Sometimes I said like, hey, can we talk about can you say something else than just criticizing what I haven't done? And so, and I think I brought that into the workplace in the beginning, because I didn't know much other models. Yeah. And so I had a really like a rough time. Yeah. It's not nice to assume bad from people, and it's not nice to play some form of prison guard. And I said, that took me a long time to understand, to have more interest in people, and maybe just, I would sum it down as like you get what you invest in people. It doesn't exist that someone, or it very rarely exists that you hire someone, you don't give them anything and they just flourish. And if they do, then they probably leave because you don't provide much to them anyway. So you have to invest to get something back.
The way I manage my divers, because I don't manage my workmates, they are my workmate, and I'm not a manager right now, I'm just manage my divers. I do it because I've done the same mistakes, I've felt the same thing, I have many experiences, and I think now my position is I wait the mistake because I know where they will do the mistake, so I just wait for them. But I wait with kindness, and I wait and I will say, I told you so, or this is where I was expecting you, so you did nothing wrong, you're just on the right way.
That's nice.
To achieve things, you're on just a spot. Now go to the next spot where I will also wait for you because I already know the next mistake.
Yeah.
So this is would be my position with my divers. About the parents, it is the same thing. The man I am here teaching or mentoring people is actually from my personal experience. My father was not great and my mother was not great. Actually not great the way I think you should be great. So I don't want to push him too low. But yeah, it's also come from my experience. My father and mother would not necessarily be the best teacher possible, but they would do the best they can.
My dad is a professor, and on the outside, he seems like a very, very proper man. He's a proper man also, but he has limitations, as everybody. But the vibe that we had in the family was also always like, oh man, my dad he's perfect. Right? Why are you angry at your dad? He bought you a new desk recently. He always buys you furniture. Well, something like that. But I was lacking the emotional. The emotional was that came short. But because I perceived that everybody said like, oh, he's amazing. Then I had to be, I must be fucked up, you know, if I have a problem with him or if he doesn't show interest in what I'm doing. So that took me a long time to understand, and I feel comfortable sharing. I don't see it like that I bash him. I find it's natural that nobody can be perfect in every different way. Everybody's a product of what they have experienced. And I know that he got very little love and affection when he was a child. So he's just passing on what he experienced, trying to make it a little bit better. Here I am, next generation. I'm trying to do a little bit better. So that's also like maybe one of the things that we should do during our journey here on the on this planet to make it a little bit better.
So yeah, I feel the same about what you said. It's we try to do the a little bit better. We accept less than they accepted before us. Dynamic was like my parents got divorced when I was 7, both of them. And the major impact of their behavior on me was that they could not talk to each other without yelling at each other.
Also, they had a really bad
They divorced and it was a bad one. It took them many years to be able to talk to each other, to be in the same room, especially my dad. So when you see the two founders exploding, it didn't intend to destroy certain things.
Did you blame yourself at that time? How did the 7-year-old you explain what's happening? Do you recall that?
I don't blame myself. I thought we were 3 brothers back then. And now we were just witnesses, from as far as I can say, witnesses to what they've done to each other. And a few years later, I questioned, because my mother would say many years, that's his fault, he left us, he went with another woman. And I questioned that, and I questioned both sides, even grandparents, to understand what happened. And I got the full picture and I understand the mechanics of a relationship, how that can happen. And I think now that every human has his own trigger. And if you put the right trigger to someone, then it will burst. Every human would do that, I think. And my mom is on the paper is an amazing mom. She definitely committed to her husband, and the kids, totally, like 100%. her thought was she forgot herself on the way. And I saw it. And this is me. I want to take care of others. And I saw it. So I wanted to her to relax, but she wouldn't let go. She would only relax with her husband when the kids are slept. So what did that, what the impact of that now is like, both mother and father, they are not really close to kids, but the brothers have still the connections. So they don't understand, but me, I have the inside picture, so I can tell them. Father, we would see him 2 weekends per month.
Yeah.
And, I remember like the first years with him was with lots of pains. We would cry the Sunday, talking about the past relationship.
Your dad as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all the four guys, three kids and the father. We would scream, cry about it. Saturday, when he takes us in, Sunday evening when he drops us, yells and cries. So the first few years, lots of pain, and after that, it gets even better. But this would be the first few years, and I had to question, and it took me many years for me to understand what happened, why it happened, and also it took my mother, for example, many years to understand who I am, and now she understands. So it takes
time.
What
did you get wrong?
So a few years later, when I was 18. Even before, she would threaten me to send me back to my father's place if I didn't do things correctly in a certain way. And I was not, to tell the truth, I was not a great kid, or not a great kid, not a perfect kid. But when you threaten me, how can I invest in this relationship? I don't want that.
Mm.
But to stand up as a kid, it's not easy, especially against your parent. So you endure, endure, endure. And one day she finally decides to send me back, and my resolution was, if you fire me from my home, you will lose forever. I love you, Mom. You will lose it. I never told her, but she felt it. I made sure that she felt it. And so for many years, she was coming back to me because she realized her mistake. And it took me many years to be in peace with her. And I had girlfriends, like obviously a few years later, and they always said to my mother and my grandma that I put them in peace. Always.
Like that's to forgive them.
Not to forgive my girlfriend. Like in the relationship, I'm really truly relaxed.
Mm.
I want to bring comfort. Like when I see that they, because they had kids, so when they I saw that they were under stress or like overwhelmed by the situation, yeah. You relax, me, I take charge. Mm. See, like a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that very genuinely in my team. And this is what I wanted to do years before with my mom. When I said, Mom, stop the working, be with us. But she didn't understand it before.
Mm.
So only when the girlfriend give them feedback, they understood. They understood me. So it takes time. Yeah. Scars and time.
So you have kind of forgiven your mom?
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Are they both still in your life?
Yeah, still. And still, I love them, and I can't wait to see them again in April, in May.
That's nice. That's nice. It's a big gift. I lost my mom in 2011. And it was a really hard blow because she provided the emotional part, and she was like the center of the family, and but it teaches you a lot also to lose a person that is so close to you. She got cancer, a really bad one. She was diagnosed to have 6 months left. She had exactly 6 months. In a way, it's kind of better than if she would have gone in a car crash, because then we had time. We had a lot of time to talk. And in the end, it felt like, okay, like we've said everything that there is to say now. And it was like that gradually, you know, she's no longer there. And luckily she didn't have to suffer much.
But I find you, for me, it was like, okay, you grow up in a different, you reach like a new chapter when you lost a parent. And one interesting effect of that was that I'm much more comfortable with death now. I was really uncomfortable with death. I had a classmate, he also got cancer and died really young. I was really, when I met him and I knew he's not going to live much longer, I was really like, oh, what should I say? How do you talk with such a person? And I find our society doesn't teach us how to deal. We try to like brush it under the carpet and not talk about it. So I didn't know what to do, but now I'm more comfortable with it, and I think I can be a better support to people that are maybe in the same situation, and maybe I'm more comfortable also thinking about my own time, that it's finite on this planet. I think there's a lot of resistance with people to think about that. What's your relationship with death?
I've lost only so far my grandpa when I was 2. I've lost friends on the way. One committed suicide. Actually, 2 of them committed suicide, and 1 got a car crash accident a few years later. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I went to visit them. But brother, sister, I have no sister, but brother, father, mother, grandparents, 3 of them still so far here, but they are getting older and older and older. And each time I leave the country to go on my land for job, it's a big goodbye, because I don't know if I'm going to see them again. One has lost her memory, so she doesn't recognize me anymore. And I'm surprised to be able to face it correctly. The other 2 are like super old, but still very aware, and it's going to be a tough loss. But as every person, I'm very confident about being flexible, being resistant to lose them. We share moments. I love them, they love me, which is the most important to know and to show. And then I just have to be ready for the D-Day. I'm not in a rush.
On the military part, I'm jumping back. One of my business partners, he's a former military. And he has a bit similar qualities than you have. Before I met people that had army experience, I thought of them maybe... It's classic, you know, how you see like maybe a crazy soldier or a killing machine or something like that. And it's very different, the personal experiences that I have from people that have been in the army. He's super focused on the team. He's a really big team player, and he wants that everybody comes along. And he's been on a peace, he was in a peacekeeping mission in when the Yugoslav war was going on. Balkan War, maybe you say. And it comes out in ways when we're out drinking and we lose someone. Then he's like, no, we're never going to leave anyone behind. We're not going home until we find the person. And it's kind of a nice quality of people that have been in the system to focus on like the team effort. It seems super important when you're in critical situations that you build good rapport amongst yourself. Do you find it fostered those qualities when in your time in the military, or how was that?
During my time in the military, I never really faced a moment like this. The Navy is in a way more protected than army, which is on the land. Because the Navy, either you have commandos, and commandos can, it's a small group, and some individuals are killed, unfortunately. But I was on a ship, and the ship didn't blow, so otherwise it would be too many casualties. So to be honest, I have never seen that. And if I have a quality like the one you're seeing, I don't think it's from the Navy or my time in the Navy. I think it's me.
Could you share a bit when you reached your end of your career in the Navy? How was it? What were the triggers? How was the process to move on? And did you know where you wanted to move when you sat there and probably were frustrated?
So it was a little bit before the very end of my career. It was 4 years before. I think it was in between 2012 and 2015. I shifted. I went from Pacific, New Caledonia, to the ship. At the beginning, I was super happy and excited about this new opportunity to do missions, and we did missions. But on a personal,
what does that mean to do a mission?
It was narcotraffic, weapons, pirates. It was extracted French from Libya. So few missions.
So in simple terms, basically hunting down a boat of pirates or some narco smugglers.
Yes.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. The mission is exciting, but the human behind was not happy at all. Not happy at all to live a life from the one I had in Pacific to the one in Toulon was a big change, and I was not just ready. I went from many, many friends, many groups to being almost alone, and this was like within days, and it was super difficult. And it took me a long time to handle that, and I didn't...
Just so I understand, so you were on a base before, you had your friends on the base, and then you got the mission, you're on the boat, and then you left like your circle of friends, is that correct?
So... To be specific, I don't know if I don't know if I'm clear. So in the Pacific, I was in a headquarter. I was inland.
Yeah.
And through the years over there, I had many groups of 20-year-olds friends, 20-ish, 27 friends, and my lover was very social. My life, like every day, could be a party. And first year was not that easy, but the second year was amazing. And when I had to leave that, like this, I had to adapt to a whole new life. And in this whole new life, I had few friends already back in France, but not as close, quite far now. And a new job with new demands, and actually a very demanding job on the ship. Lots of time. And so, yeah, you have to adapt. And I think I was not, I don't know if you can be ready, but I was not ready then. But I did the job, I stick to the plan, and I did my years on the ship. And it was not easy for my head. And some people would see a specialist, and I didn't. I think with a specialist you would heal faster, but I was very patient.
What healed faster?
Like I think I went through depression.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I went through depression.
What kind of signs did you have?
Depression. Like going from 8 to like doing 12 hours a day at a job without windows, and being in back home and not super happy, like just wasting my time.
Yeah.
And not happy at all, like could not wait to deal with another day, and like escaping. I was not
How did you escape?
I think I'm super patient, and I have lots of hope. I think that people like cannot make it through depression; they lose hope, and I still had hope. Yeah. I think hope helped me. I think.
I interpreted escape that you were escaping temporarily when you felt bad. Mm-hmm. Like I was thinking, maybe alcohol was in the picture, or other ways to distract yourself.
No. I'm not this. I didn't destroy. I got fat for sure, but no. I didn't touch alcohol. A few drinks sometimes, but nothing bad, and no drugs at all. Just deep. And at certain point, I never see specialists, but at that point, because it has an impact on the end of my career, I think I also got a burnout. And this one is a different pain, because I remember very specifically a day where I went to cry in the office of my superior. And while I was crying, I was like, well, that's not me. And I could not stand this this work, this life, this way of being me. And
what had happened that got you to cry?
I don't know. Just like a fire. Like the word burnout is like come from the fact that something is burning inside you.
Mm.
And for me, it was like it was too much, and I cried back to back in two different offices like this, and I could not stand it. And as soon as I left the ship to have a different job in the Navy, actually I felt a little bit better. This chapter of the ship, even if it was super interesting in some ways, on a personal point of view, it was difficult. So I changed city, I changed the job, and I felt much better in this new job.
But you were still in the Navy.
For one more year. And then in this last year, I was planning my new life, diving instructor, which came on the ship, also on the side, on my personal life. So, and I see right now today that diving is used for psychotherapy also, and I can relate. It definitely has helped me to feel better. It was depression and burnout that led me to this need of change. The way I explain it to people is like, it's you and what you are doing. And me in the Navy, it's like I kind of have a deal between the two sides of me. I wanted to travel, to navigate, and this deal was okay. It just cost me a job I didn't really like. But at a certain point, doesn't matter when or how, if this deal is not okay, the two sides of you like can separate, and they create a tension between each other. And I think that this is the tension I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, it's like an elastic and it snaps. And this is what happened. It had to snap. And when it snaps, either you definitely got loose or you align again with yourself. And this is, I think, what happened with me. And now I feel in peace with what I am. I have other challenges coming ahead, but right now, the way the Pierre I am is very happy.
That's beautiful. I'm happy to hear that. It's really good. I experienced maybe something similar as well, like not being true to myself. As a young man, I had the idea that I should be able to do everything that is required, whatever it is in the company. And if I'm not good at it, I just need to work harder. Then I'm just lazy if I don't want to do it. And I took a lot of external cues to what is desirable and what I should do. One example is I went to business school, and back then it was considered cool, then okay, the best thing is to become a consultant or an investment banker. So then I took a finance course. It was terribly boring. I fell asleep constantly at the first row in front of the professor, but I still didn't get the cue that maybe this is not what I should be doing. And I, with great pain, I forced myself to complete the course, and I've totally failed in the exam. It was just a big waste of time.
Me too. During the course of my specialty, I totally failed. So I feel you.
But it's funny that even though it's obvious in the hindsight, I didn't get it then. It also afterwards, when I had started my company, I again then said yes to whatever came up without the clear. Have a little exotic animal hopping on you.
We're
on the beach, man. And that's my learning from it. Yeah, you can do a lot, but the outcome is you're gonna have a relatively poor outcome, and you're gonna be much more drained doing an activity that you shouldn't be doing. I was thinking, think of Michael Jordan, for instance. Like, he became good because he focused on what he's supposed to be doing. It wouldn't be the same if he at the same time tried to become an accountant. It's bizarre. And I think one thing that I want to then put forward to my kids is I hope that they can come to this realization quicker and just find their passion and then do it. Because then you're going to do something truly
amazing if you follow what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's, what you say make me think about lots of things, about charisma, about you say Michael Jordan, but it, everybody can be a Michael Jordan in his own job.
Exactly.
I think we are many like this, but it's not about, it's not about choice really, it's not about working hard, it's about the only hard work for me to be a man, because I guess it is a main idea that you have behind. It's about growing and really finding as fast as you can who you are. And school, because it is the first teacher we have, doesn't help you do that. School is just to make you interesting, like to be, it's a very interesting thing, school. But it doesn't teach you, or it doesn't tell you, or it doesn't lead you to who you are supposed to be. It makes like it's logical choice after logical choice. It's not the same than being who you are. And for example, I think my life is about teaching and sharing, and I've never learned at school to share or to lead or to do anything. It's a second step. First step is school, it's basic, it's like knowledge. You want to learn this knowledge or you don't. You are good at that or don't. But then these systems bring you to school and etc. So it's logical, right? But then I think it's just after, as a second life, that you understand who you are. And it takes a few years. So I think it's step by step. Life is step by step.
Absolutely. There's a, I don't know if you heard about him, Peter Thiel. He is a Silicon Valley investor. One of the questions that he asks founders that he invests in is, please tell me, I hope I don't butcher this question now, but tell me an idea, something you believe in that most people would disagree with currently. And I'll begin with that. Since you talked about school, I think it could be that school does more harm than it does good now for many people, because I find school is a bit antiquated. It basically teaches you how to become a good employee. It there's a lot of meta learning going on. Also, you're supposed to get up early in the morning, you're supposed to just listen to instructions and then to complete the task without asking, and also without being creative, right? Most often you get punished if you solve something in a different way. It's very straightforward. One answer, only that. And we had an exam, you and I, just the other day, and I sat in the school bench and you were my teacher. And that brought me back to the school thing, because there were some questions and they were a bit ambiguous. But then you highlighted, no, but it needs to be answered in exactly this way, in this wording, right? That's like really the school feeling, right? That you need to memorize exactly this, you know?
I had no choice. I have to follow instructions, right? But about school, yes. I think it's like... I don't know where this image... I hope it won't be too bad, but... It's like when you feed the duck, like
for foie gras.
Like you're forcing them to feed, or you can let the same duck feed himself with whatever he wants, and this is should school should be.
Mm.
You should let the kid to look for the information he needs, for exactly what he needs. But if you give him too much, then it's just disgusting at a certain point, I think. So the best it would be to find a balance, because if you just wait for the kids to find information, it would just get lazy. So you have to make it interesting, but yeah, the school has to evolve. Yes.
So now I pass it on to you. What idea do you have that most people would disagree with? The more provocative, the better. Yeah.
The more provocative, the better. Wow. Difficult. I talk about something with my workmate, Joel. It was actually about seduction.
Oh, yes.
I like this topic.
The topic of seducing women.
Actually, it's not. Yeah, that's true. Me, I think he's kind of passive in a way, and I think he's active in a way. It's two fundamental, I would say, point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I think to seduce, you don't have to do anything. Actually, you have to be yourself, fully, yes. Fully, truly yourself, and then you shine.
Yes.
So this is the one job you can do. And facing you, you have other people. And these people, beautiful or ugly, either they like what you are,
yes,
or they don't.
Yes.
And the tricky part is the equation. You can have facing you a girl you don't like and a girl you like. And maybe you embody something for the girl you don't like, and maybe you're not representing something for the girl you like. You see, it's tricky. It's not totally. as simple.
Totally.
So after that, it's ego. Ego is also very present here. And
you mean specifically on this island?
Oh, in island for sure. Yeah. This island for sure. This lifestyle for sure. But in general, ego is here, and you want things. You say, "I want her. I want him." And ego is not supposed to be here. It's just what I've noticed through the people I've met, the girls I've met here. It's like it comes when you're true to yourself. It's you can smell, read. You can see the whole situation coming. It's like ego blinds you. But if you are true, if you really are yourself, then it's very easy to know and to feel right away if something is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like I have these stories in Turks and Caicos with a girl I met at 8 o'clock, and at 10, boom, at 10.
Yeah.
And
it's a good turnaround time.
Yes, yes. But you see, in here never happened. So ego here is a little bit in pain, but I don't forget who I am and what can happen. So yes, this is my point of view. You represent something for someone, and he either likes it or not. So you don't have to do something. It's come very naturally. And the other point of view is Joel has to act. He's yes. A hunter. This would be a total point of view. So what do you think?
Yeah, this is super interesting. I love that you took it into the seduction thing. <'cause> I've geeked out a bit on that. I don't know how familiar you are. There's literature on this topic. Yeah. There's when I was a young man, when we were young men, there was this book called The Game. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's by an author called Neil Strauss. He's a relatively geeky dude. He's bald like us, and he found and joined this like a subculture of people calling themselves pickup artists. Okay. And they just go out and try to pick up as many women as possible every evening. And then they have then developed a set of phrases, a set of rituals and things you can do in order to, they believe them, seduce any woman out there. And it's interesting because it's like, totally the polar opposite of showing who you are. You memorize a couple of phrases, and one thing that it's about is you're supposed to neg, you're supposed to like tease a bit the woman and make her then question, are you interested or not? And so in general, that strikes me as a part of toxic masculinity, of putting up an act. And but it's also something that fits when you're young and you're not really certain. Maybe the point is, deep down in your heart, you're not certain. Am I lovable the way I am? Or do I need to memorize a couple of phrases in order to get someone's interest? And it's maybe easier. It's maybe the McDonald's version of explaining how to pick up some, right? It's like, no, be yourself is more difficult, because then you put yourself out there. I tried this method, and it's not as scary to go up and tell a couple of lines you've read in the book, because you're not showing who you are. And if the lines fail, that doesn't represent that you have failed, maybe, right? So maybe the one advantage that it gives is it gives shy guys, it lowers the hurdle to at least initiate any kind of
conversation, and already then you're further than if you just sit in the corner and don't do anything, perhaps. Somehow you need to communicate something in order to catch someone.
That's true. I totally agree with you. My experience was, actually, when you get naked in front of someone, and I'm not talking about clothes, I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
Every human, I guess, is sensitive to truth, honesty. And you can see right away, if you pay attention, to the face and the eye and the breathing, the way people receive what you're giving them. And it's, if you are sensitive to that, then it's like almost addictive. So for me, on the opposite side, I'm addictive to truth. I'm addictive to being naked, to be like honest. And then it changed the whole situation. It changed the whole interaction for me.
Yeah. I think there's someone for everyone. Mm. I think there's women that are totally into someone that just delivers a few toxic lines, right? But, but you do yourself a favor to just, again, be true to who you are, because then you find someone that you find interesting to wake up next to also in a couple of years, right? That, and then, I just want to go back to this pickup literature. Then there's another book that came out later. It's called Models. And that one, you can tell it's been like a decade or so. That is really good, actually. That book encourages you to... It goes on that, be true to who you are. Just like, show directly who you are. And don't be afraid to... He writes like, polarize them. Right? Say something that either will make them, this, I don't like it, or then catches the interest. And I like that much more, because then you save time. He says a pickup process is just, it's just about to scan. Women are in three categories. Either they're like receptive, and or they're like on the fence, or they're not receptive. So just by talking to them and saying something that shows who you are quickly, you then polarize them, and then you very quickly find out, okay, is she someone that could fit for me? You should ask the question not like, oh, how can I pick her up? It should rather be like, is she suitable for who I am?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Totally. Yeah, I don't know if I can add something up, but it's perfect. It's perfect.
But I wasn't like that as a young man at all. I was much more just like, I'll say whatever to get into her pants.
I guess every young guys or every young girls is the same. You have to build on the ego first. You have to build on the ego first. When you have fed your ego, your love, your self-love, then you can grow. But it's like it's a step. Like I did the same with the hairs.
Oh, yeah.
Elegant, then try to seduce as much as I can, but it doesn't last for me. It doesn't last. It's just a step.
Yeah. Okay, but so how did how did Joel receive the tip, condensed? Like, what did you tell him, and how did he receive it?
Yeah, it was just mostly I didn't want to really share. I was more listening to his point of view.
Yeah.
And he said that he met a friend that were actually this kind of guy, pickup and pickup guys. And he gave him confidence, and he grew. And as far as I can see, he can seduce. But like you said, we are so many people. We have all our different needs. I cannot say that even if it's a pure intention. I cannot say that my way of seeing things and living is the way that everybody has to. I think they should. But you have everybody has his cars, and everybody has his way, and everybody finds his own way of being happy.
It also made me think of, I have very, very few experiences with cocaine, but the ones I have is that it took me to a point, like I was immediately transported into, now I'm going to show who I am. And I'm amazing. I'm amazing. And if someone doesn't like it, that's their loss. That's too bad for them. And it's really lovely to be in that stage. I guess maybe that's part of why people get really into it and it's addictive. But you can reach that stage on your own in a natural way. Also,
you can or you can't?
For sure you can. Yeah, for sure you can. It takes some work.
That's true. That's true.
It takes some work.
You
mentioned diving and that it has therapeutic potential. I totally agree. We had a great conversation on the pool together with my wife the other day. But before we go into that, can you describe to someone who has never been diving, like, what's the deal? Why should you do it?
Why? You can see it's a whole different world. Like, you can feel, experience, and see. You can feel light. You can experience a strength that you never felt unless you've been in a storm or a hurricane, which is a current. And it's strong enough to push you and to make you feel miserable. And you can see amazing stuff. Like, here we can see manta. I've seen whale sharks. I've seen hammerhead coming down to me. You can be next to sharks. Sharks are super interesting. Like, they are so powerful. And they can be next to you and doing nothing. Manta, they can hover just on top of your head and, like, being just elegant. The sharks, like, I remember being afraid of sharks, and they felt it. They literally felt it. And they turned around me. And then, since they are not necessarily my interest, they just left. I saw a big hammerhead cruising just a little bit below me, and then I was like, man, you didn't scan me, so I'm about to see you again. And 10 minutes later, guess who's on my level now? I'm ahead, and he just came closer to scan me, and then boom, gone. It's a very interesting animal. So, yeah, for this reason, you should dive.
That's interesting. If I would have to describe it, I would describe it. It's like being on another planet.
It is.
Right? You don't need to go to outer space. Everything changes. It's awesome. It's the gravity changes. It's a bit like flying also. It's super cool that you have this new dimension of going up and down. And yeah, it's so beautiful and so different down there. And a quality that I appreciate, I've been meditating quite a bit, and I find that breath is interesting. And the breath becomes so central when you're diving. Because for those who've never tried it, if you breathe in, your lungs are basically like a balloon. So they inflate, they then bring you higher. Then you start to go up. And if you want to go down, you exhale more. You also have the BCD that was mentioned before that you can work with. You can inflate and deflate that. But it shows you clearly if you're relaxed or not, because then the breathing becomes an issue. So I kind of like concentrating on the breath, and diving definitely takes me there, and it moves me into the zone. I can't think about much else when I'm down there, because I got to be alert. There's a Polish psychologist who's been researching about what is lasting happiness. And he said that lasting happiness is when you're in a state of flow. And a state of flow, he describes as that you are challenged to the point that you forget time and you can't think of anything else. Compare it to, say, you're going quickly on skis down the mountain. You have to concentrate on what you're doing. If you don't, you fall on your face. And diving, at least for me in this stage where I am, I need to concentrate. Otherwise, I will start going too high or too low or collide with a coral or whatever. So I'm in flow. I forget time and space. I'm just there. My head is empty. I don't have much words in my head when I go around there. I'm just experiencing. And that's what I love about it. The therapeutic side of it, would you care to, can you develop a little bit where you see the therapeutic potential?
So I totally agree with what you said.
I'm not an expert. Scientist would be even better, but I think what happens to us when we are diving is like all our basic functions by day, they are automatic. So since they are automatic, then our thoughts, we have time to think about many things, happy or not happy actually. But when we're diving, the automatic functions such as breathing, they become, like you said, central and very, very present. And I think the best part is finally we connect again to us. We take time for us. And the time is like slows down. And we are really into the moment, I think. I think the yoga, I quickly saw many activities. They bring the breathing as a main focus, and the diving makes it like it's mandatory, because you don't hear your breathing by day, but during the dive you can hear. Yes. Sorry for the mic. Yeah. So now suddenly you say, this is how I breathe, and this is how I feel. This is why I talk about feeling things. You feel like you're falling. You feel that you're going up. You feel maybe, if you're not lucky, a rock that you're touching. You feel many things. And this is this connection between the outside experience and the inner experience that are very present, very important, that makes diving such very like therapeutical, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I find it also highlights, or I'll start like this. I find a lot of people, a lot of unhappiness in our society and a lot of problems in our society is that people are too disconnected from nature. Life mainly revolves around getting up, getting to the office and then going back again. And also to the point that your personal relationships suffer because you give your all to just feeding the money-making process of your career. This is a little side note, but we got to know people here, well, they're doing well and great, but it baffled me. They have three kids like us, and they bring a nanny, and then they have the nanny and the kids live in one end of the island, and then they live in the other end of the island. They're totally disconnected from the kids. And I mean, I don't judge, like, do live your life as you want, but I find, for me, I couldn't do that, because like when I have kids, then I want to connect with them, I want to be close to them. And I think it's really important, if you're not taking the choice to have kids, then to actually be there for them. But I see it as a result of being totally in to, because they're working while they're here also, you know. Yeah, so with diving, you really feel connected to the nature, in and also connected to everybody together. Like when you're in the current together, you see everybody's moving together, and just that is, I think it does well to the soul to feel that we're all one, you know. There's Buddhistic ideas of it, and so that's, you know, that maybe we're all like leaves on the same tree or something like that. Those are some of the few things that I thought that I can't think of when I'm down in the water and witnessing this. But you asked me about the therapeutic qualities. I observed it in the conversation with you and my wife. So as I stated, she was rather nervous. When you're rather nervous, your breathing changes, you breathe high up in the lungs, and when you're diving, that's a problem, because then you start to float, then you can't come down. And especially problematic if you're in a cave, or like half cave, and then you collide with the roof, that's not really, that's not really pleasant. It's a problem, it highlights it. So you have to, in order to reach the state, you said, in probably other words, you have to surrender. Like, it's going to be fine. My BCD will take care of it. My breathing will take care of it. What I'm after, you shouldn't resist. As soon as you resist, it's a problem. It's a problem. So I think for my wife, it was really therapeutic to have to let go and to have, like, not to resist. I think there's a lot of, has been much resistance and tension and so, and it's been really beautiful to, during these 2 weeks then, to see how she's become better at accepting, letting go, and you've been the central part of that, and I'm thankful for it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I have to say thank you. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
this is my favorite part in my life, I guess, to have an impact on people. And to, yeah, this is what I felt. Because you see, this part, I don't necessarily say the same way to each person. Because it's like, I felt for Mari, it was a way of reaching her. Surrender. I think this word was...
Surrender is
really key. Yes. But I'm super happy to meet you guys. It was an honest pleasure. This experience is super fun.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to have another drink with you guys.
Yeah, I hope you make it to Berlin. It will be, we'd have a lot of fun. Let's see. To round it off... What advice would you give to the listener? Any kind of advice? What would you recommend?
The only thing I have in mind is be true to yourself. Yeah, that's the only thing. Be true to yourself. It may cost you, but it will benefit you at a certain point. And yeah, have a drink for me, guys.
All right. Hey, yeah, I want to... Thank you for a beautiful conversation. This turned out really well.
Thank you, Martin. Yeah, it was super nice.
Yeah.